On the show today, Republican presidential candidates take to the stage.
Both Chris Christie and Ron DeSantis attack him for being a no-show. Christie got in a jibe, said they're not going to call him Donald Trump, but rather Donald Duck. He keeps skipping the debate.
Plus, what might an election in Slovakia mean for Ukraine?
I'm afraid it might cause a bit of a domino effect, especially in countries that are awaiting elections. And I mean, we're already seeing in Poland that the issue of support is Ukraine is being brought up.
And later, in what appears to be an international effort, an American soldier is released from North Korea. Today is Thursday, September 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in Washington, I'm Steve Karish. Wednesday night in California, just as this program is wrapping up production, the second debate by U.S. Republican presidential candidates is also wrapping up. For some early observations, I'm joined by VOA's Ken Breedemeyer.
My indication in watching it this time is that they've been a little tougher on Trump being absent once again. Deeming it not in his political requirement to show up. Both Chris Christie and Ron DeSantis attacked him for being a no-show. Christie got in a jibe, said they're not going to call him Donald Trump, but rather Donald Duck if he keeps skipping the debates. But also, it seems to me that a lot of the talk is aimed as if it were a general election already, attacking Democrats, Joe Biden. That's understandable coming from Republican presidential candidates, but none of these candidates is close to Trump in winning the Republican nomination. It frankly isn't going to matter what these guys think about Biden or the Democrats if they don't get the nomination.
Has there been one issue that stood out as the most divisive amongst the candidates?
I wouldn't say so much divisive, but they all have pilloried Biden for the handling of immigration at the border. There are been repeated comments from the candidates saying it's time to... As one candidate put it, I think it was Tim Scott, who said Joe Biden shouldn't be on the picket line. He ought to be at the border with Mexico, stopping illegal immigration. They clearly view that as a winning argument down the road. Again, there's no real disagreement among these Republicans. They've sparred to some degree on the degree to which they've been would be able to control spending, various programs. They've attacked each other, one or two aiming at another one on the stage. I'm not sure with all the crosstalk and everything, a lot of times the moderators lost control of the debate, and it comes across as a jumble of words. I'm not sure how anybody's going to pick out what each one said.
That's VOA's Ken Breedemeyer. We spoke on Wednesday evening, just as the debate was coming to an end. For full coverage, including post-debate analysis, visit us online at voanews.com. At least 50,000 people have fled from their homes in Nagorno-Karabakh into Armenia this week. The exodus comes after decades of conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan appear to have ended swiftly in Baku's favor. VOA's Heather Murdoch is on the scene in Armenia, near the border with Nagorno-Karabakh.
We're here on the road from the Armenian capital, Yerevan, to the border with the region known as Nagorno-Karabakh, which has been fought over for decades between Azerbaijan and Armenia.
Azerbaijan appears to have gained control of the entire Nagorno-Karabakh region. And now ethnic Armenians who lived in the enclave are fleeing in huge numbers. The road from the self-declared, yet largely unrecognized, republic is open after many months of isolation and blockade. We spoke to families who said their trip out of the region was harrowing, taking 30 to 40 hours to travel about 100 kilometers. More devastating than the journey, they told us, was abandoning their homes, businesses, and the graves of their loved ones. But families told us many others are not evacuating despite recent violence because they are searching for people who are missing or dead. And as night falls, families continue to stream across the border at alarming rates, while humanitarian workers struggle to keep up with what is becoming a mass exodus. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, from Armenia, near the border with Nagorno-Karabakh.
And here are some other stories we're following from around the world. Russia on Wednesday accused the United States and Britain of helping Ukraine carry out an attack last week against the headquarters of the Russian Black Sea Fleet in Russia-occupied Crimea. A foreign ministry spokesperson said the attack was planned in advance using Western intelligence means, NATO satellite assets, and reconnaissance planes. While the U.S. and other Western partners have provided military equipment and training to Ukraine, U.S. officials have denied playing a direct role in Ukraine's defense against the Russian invasion. The Chinese government has accused Taiwan's ruling party of seeking independence. This one day after the self-governing island's president lobbied for Australia's support in joining a regional trade pact. Meanwhile, in what is seen as an attempt to ease Beijing's concerns over Washington's deepening security ties with Tokyo and Seoul, China has agreed to hold a summit with Japan and South Korea as early as possible. Robert Fico, whose party appears tied for the lead in Slovakia's parliamentary election on Saturday, says he would end military support for Ukraine and block the country's path to NATO membership, all while opposing sanctions on Russia. As Henry Ridgewell reports, Ukraine's Western allies fear that a Fico victory could prompt other countries to question their support for Kyiv following Russia's 2022 invasion.
Robert Fico's Smer party is the narrow front runner in Slovakia's upcoming parliamentary elections. He has promised to end military support for Ukraine. At a recent rally, Fico told supporters that he would not send one more bullet from the country's reserves to Ukraine. Slovakia has, until now, been a strong supporter of Ukraine, donating its fleet of Soviet-era MiG-29 fighter jets and an S-300 air defense system. Fico says such support prolongs the war. He opposes sanctions on Moscow and says he would block Ukraine from joining NATO. In an interview with the Associated Press, he said the combined weight of the US and the EU should be used to force the warring parties to sit down and find some sort of compromise that would guarantee security for Ukraine. Fico's party is polling around 18%, not enough to give him an outright victory. He has served as Slovakia's prime minister twice before. Fico was forced to resign in 2018 after the slaying of investigative journalist Jan Kuciak and his fiancée Martina Kuznirova prompted mass protests. Since then, Slovakia has had four different prime ministers in 5 years. Fico appears to have regained his support, partly on the back of his calls to end support for Ukraine. Dominika Hajdu is an analyst at the Globsec think tank in Bratislava.
Slovakia has historically had quite a large portion of the society with pro-Russian sentiments.
Fico has tied support for Ukraine to Slovakia's economic problems. Again, Dominika Hajdu.
So just to give you an example, by providing military support to Ukraine, we are taking security guarantees from Slovakia. By providing financial support to Ukraine, we're taking money from Slovaks who need it more, right?
Fico sees Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban as a future ally in taking on NATO and the European Union over Ukraine, say analysts. Grigory Mesesnikov is from the Slovak Institute for Public Affairs. He says he thinks Fico is not brave enough to become a single dissident. But now that he's got Orbán, he's got a solid point to adhere to. So he will join Orbán. He has become very authentically pro-Russian and spreads Russian narratives, Mesesnikov said. In several other Western countries, populist parties skeptical of the West's support for Ukraine enjoy significant support. Again, Dominika Haidu of Globsec.
I'm afraid it might cause a bit of a domino effect, especially in countries that are awaiting elections. And I mean, we're already seeing in Poland that the issue of support is Ukraine is being brought up.
Polling just behind Fico is the Progressive Slovakia Party, which is strongly pro-Western and supports military aid for Ukraine. Analysts say coalition negotiations will be difficult for any party, and the elections are unlikely to end Slovakia's political turmoil. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
From Washington, it's VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. Coming up in the program, researchers in New Zealand are examining the relationship between climate change and natural disasters. Kashmiri women are finding their voices, and we meet an entrepreneur in the Democratic Republic of Congo who has a new and innovative use for discarded plastic. But first, in what's looking like a large international effort, American soldier Private Travis King has been transferred out of North Korea with the help of Sweden and China. The AP's Charles de la Desma reports.
Private Travis King was transferred out of North Korea across the border to China with the help of Sweden and China. Sweden was the chief interlocutor with North Korea on the transfer, while China helped facilitate the transfer, according to three senior Biden administration officials who briefed reporters on the condition of anonymity to discuss the transfer. One official underscored that the US was grateful for China's assistance, but that Beijing did not play a further mediating role in the events. The advisers said that the US had first learned through Swedish officials earlier this month that North Korea was looking to expel King, the US not providing any concessions to the North in exchange for King. I'm Charles de la Desma.
In New Zealand, researchers will investigate how climate change could increase the risk of damage triggered by earthquakes and landslides, two of the country's deadliest and most costly natural disasters. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The team from the University of Canterbury in New Zealand says this is a high priority area of research because a warming climate and frequent storms will have a profound impact on people's lives and property. The study will investigate the impact of climate change on natural disasters, such as landslides, cliff collapse and flooding that are triggered by earthquakes. Researchers report that landslides have caused more deaths in New Zealand than any other natural hazard and result in $178 million in insurance claims each year. Timothy Stall is a senior lecturer at the University of Canterbury's School of Earth and Environment. He tells VOA that global warming and earthquakes can combine to cause significant destruction.
The more saturated a hill slope is, the more likely it is to fail in a landslide. And if you have earthquakes occurring, shaking those saturated hill slopes, then you can much more easily cause earthquake-induced landslides. And a good example of this was what happened in Hokkaido in Japan in 2018, where you had a typhoon come through, saturating hill slopes there, and then a magnitude 6-something earthquake the next day, which caused thousands of landslides to fall off the hill slopes, causing all sorts of chaos.
Both Japan and New Zealand lie on the so-called Ring of Fire, a horseshoe-shaped band of seismically active fault lines around the Pacific basin. Stall says the study aims to help earthquake-prone countries be better prepared and resilient, and will include improved guidance for building near active fault lines.
No matter where you are, if it's tectonically active, then you're going to have this interaction between earthquakes and climate change. And it's just really important to have a more accurate picture of what that interaction is going to look like.
In February, New Zealand was hit by Cyclone Gabrielle, the worst storm so far this century. The earthquake-prone South Pacific nation of about 5 million people is known as the Shaky Isles. About 14,000 earthquakes occur in and around New Zealand each year. Most are too small to be noticed, but between 150 and 200 are powerful enough to be felt. Last week, a 6.2 magnitude earthquake struck the country's South Island. The epicenter was about 120 kilometres west of Christchurch and was the strongest quake to hit New Zealand this year. The University of Canterbury Natural Disasters research should be completed by 2027. Phil Mercer, VOA News, Sydney.
In Goma, a city in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, residents say plastic and other waste is increasingly polluting Lake Kivu. A new initiative is keeping some of that waste out of the lake. Aster Malivika has this report from Goma, narrated for us by Aida Issa.
Plastic pollution plagues many cities in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Here in Goma, an eastern city near the border with Rwanda, plastic waste blocks the canals of Lake Kivu and pollutes water residents use for drinking. Mukengere Bienvenu, a resident of Goma, founded Resilience for Development Group, a company that collects plastic waste and processes it into bricks used in building houses.
What motivated me is to protect the environment and, secondly, to create jobs for young people like us, and to help those who build houses so that they can get good material.
Bienvenu melts plastic waste and turns it into materials used in house and road construction. He says he now needs help building a factory that can provide jobs for young people.
There are meetings being held with many organizations in the United States, Europe, and Africa, where they can support projects like this. We have people asking them to look at Congo, because what is happening in Congo is not just a war. There are people who think about development issues to help people affected by war.
For more than a year, Kagaju Janvier has been collecting plastic waste in the Mungunga area near Goma, where cars have been dumping waste from the city and destroying farms. Janvier says his work helps support him and his family.
Personally, I have worked for 1 year in this job. It helps me earn money for food at home and clothes. But as for paying school fees for students, I see that this job helps me.
Kashimani Luhando, a customer, uses the bricks in his building projects. He says Bienvenu's business benefits the community.
This work helps young people who would have been recruited by armed groups. Here there is no sand and cement. We only use plastics. And this effort needs to be supported because it helps a lot of people.
Bienvenu says that his relatively new company makes between 200 to 300 bricks per day, not enough compared with what goes into the lake, and that he needs more people to expand his project. For Oster Malivika in Goma, Aida Issa, VOA News.
And finally today, in a part of the world racked with tension and conflict, more and more women are turning to the world of words and literature. Muhit Aluzlam has more from Srinagar in Indian-administered Kashmir.
A change is emerging on the Indian side of Kashmir. Educators say more women are finding their voices through literature and becoming authors. Like Azra Mufti, she's written two books and is encouraging hundreds of locals, especially girls, to embrace literature as a career. Her first book explores the lives of two girls living in a conflict-torn region. The second delves into global gender issues.
What I feel over the years, the trend of writing has increased because people now want to, especially females, they want to just get things off their chest and they want to let the world know about their struggles, about their feelings.
While the Kashmir Valley has a rich history of female authors, their works, largely written in Kashmiri, had not gotten much exposure outside the region. But now, authors say more books are being translated and published in other languages too. Suhela Shabir says she started writing to vent feelings of loneliness after she excelled in class and skipped a school year to the 8th grade, leaving behind her old classmates and struggling to connect with new ones. Since then, she has written 3 books.
My first book is the collection of quotations that are motivational quotes. The second book is actually the summing up of the poetry of a 15-year-old girl. That's why the name Obsolete, Old. And then the third book, Zone, which revolves around the theme of Hubba Khatun, the great poetess of Kashmir.
Shahnawaz Muntazir teaches English at Amar Singh College in Srinagar. He says more women in this conservative region are choosing to express themselves through a literary point of view about life, society, culture, gender, and religion.
We have seen this trend recently, and it is increasing day by day. It gives them the sense of power, the sense of privilege, and then they get access to the thoughts, which are otherwise considered to be taboos in our society.
Hinana Burgess is a physician and author of The Mahzoor, a popular book in the Middle East. It's a love story about a couple and two opposing clans locked in internal conflict.
I write about the blank spaces between relationships. That's exactly how I feel about writing. Writing about things, relationships, that's unsaid, that needs to be jotted down, that people want to say but cannot say because of some reason.
Meanwhile, these authors advise new writers to put down their thoughts, polish their skills, and immerse themselves in literature to help bring forward their best. Mohitul Islam, VOA News, Srinagar, Indian Administered Kashmir.
And that's going to do it for us today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow voanews.com on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken has announced an additional $65 million in U.S. assistance to Haiti to further professionalize the Haitian National Police and strengthen its capacity to safeguard communities. The United States is also imposing additional visa restrictions on current and former Haitian officials who are enabling the violence that has engulfed the Haitian people. Secretary Blinken called the situation in Haiti dire.
More than 2,000 killings in the first 6 months of this year. More than 1,000 kidnappings in the same period. Over 5 million Haitians who urgently need humanitarian assistance. Tens of thousands of Haitians facing catastrophic hunger. Nearly 60,000 suspected cholera cases. Nearly half of those cases are children.
Hosting a Haiti-focused event on the sidelines of the recent UN General Assembly, Secretary Blinken urged the Security Council to pass a resolution authorizing a UN-backed multinational security support mission to Haiti. The Kenyan government has expressed willingness to serve as the lead nation of the mission, and the United States, said Secretary Blinken, is prepared to give substantial assistance.
We intend to work with our Congress to provide $100 million in support, and our Department of Defense is prepared to provide robust enabling support, including planning assistance, intelligence support, airlift, communications, and medical support. We urge the international community to pledge additional personnel, as well as equipment, logistics, training, and funding. We cannot be successful without these contributions.
Secretary Blinken stressed that progress must also be made on Haiti's political crisis. The support mission will not be a substitute for political progress, he said, but it can help create space for Haiti to move forward. With international support, the mission could be deployed within months, said Secretary Blinken. We really have no time to lose. We can and we must do what's necessary to make that happen, he declared. The safety, the security, the future of the Haitian people and people across the region depend on the urgency of our action.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.